Welcome to Blackter. Join me as I examine the best of Black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special episode of Blackter. I am your host, Gabe Moses. I have the privilege of being here virtually with actor, writer, director, teacher, composer, all of the above, and playwright of Chicken and Biscuits on Broadway, Douglas Lyons. How's it going, Douglas?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for being here to talk with me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So real quick, before we get into everything, would you just like to tell me how your year has been?
Oh, boy. It has been a mixture of complete highs and lows, to be honest. Chicken and Biscuits coming to Broadway was a complete surprise. It was not something that was planned. Before the pandemic, we were in a black box theater at the Queens Theater out in Flushing. So it's been a whirlwind. I've worked on my first television show. I've, co-written music for television. I have a Broadway play. I have a pilot that got picked up for development. Just like crazy things have happened in a very traumatic year. And I would actually give it all back to bring back the lives we've lost. But I think there's also been lessons that we've learned during this time about the world and about ourselves. So, yeah.
Sure. It's crazy how, so much good can come from tragedy,
I know, but my thing is like, does it always have to take that? Do we always have to go through a really problematic or painful moment to see the light? And maybe that's just the evolution of the world, but right. I would prefer it not be that way.
Right. Yeah. We can only do so much,
Yeah.
So I like to begin these interviews by talking about upbringing. So looking back to your childhood and like even throughout your going to grade school, when was the moment that you decided you wanted to have a career in the arts?
I was 16 years old. I'm from New Haven, Connecticut originally, and the national tours of Cats and Rent, the Rent tour that I would join 3 years later, would come through the Schubert Theater. And I remember being like gobsmacked and just struck by the lights and the costumes and the makeup, and they were singing and they were kittens and they were dancing. And I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I was feeling something. Something was like drawing me in. And I had, sang in church all my life and done a lot of dancing school and teaching, but I had never had acting training or like show choir and music theory, any of that. And when I learned the art form was called musical theater and not just Broadway, I was like, okay, well, maybe there's a place for me in this thing. And so very late into high school, I auditioned for four programs and I only got into one, which was the Hart School. And that's where I went to train and it changed my life.
Yeah. Was there a particular moment that you felt like you had a breakthrough as an actor, as a singer, as a dancer, in college?
I think when I started getting voice lessons and dance and acting training, really, where I was like, oh, these are the techniques that people use to act, like piecing it all together and trying to figure out how the hat was made, was an epiphany for me in the business. And I think Hart taught me a lot of that. So I really am grateful for that training. Really, really grateful.
Sure. Was it your sophomore year of college when you got that national tour for Rent?
It was the summer into junior year I got Rent. I had auditioned like six times over a 2 year period. And that particular summer I was doing three different contracts in two different states. And I was in callbacks going back and forth from the Algonquin Playhouse. And I'll never forget, I got the call. We were on a 10-minute break from our first equity meeting for Cinderella. And I had a 212 missed call and I called them back. And they were like, we would like to offer you the swing position on the national tour. And called my parents and my father was like, how much are they paying you? And you're going back to school, which I did. And so I went on tour for a year and learned so much. So much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question is always, from parents at least, how much are they paying you? Just so funny.
Well, because it has to be a viable career. Like what we do
Right.
can't be charity. If you're going to make it a career, you really have to be able to survive, you know, and it's
Right.
so hard to get the job. And then hopefully the job will pay you enough to eat and take care of all your bills to do the next thing, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what a big stepping stone to be in training, but also be in training while you're working too. Can you speak to like what you learned from that tour?
Yeah, I learned personality, you know, like it's a job. So you're not just working, but you're also dealing with people. I learned to save my money. I learned the importance of rest, and making sure that you are treating it like a business and not a party, right? I was buying things on tour at 19 that I was giving away like weeks later. I didn't need that stuff, right? So learning how to be a business person, you know, and to really take care of yourself, within the work and, you know, to save for the hard times that you may have up ahead. You know, it's not always going to be bliss. You know, it's
Sure.
not all, you're not always going to be booked. So you have to think of your career for the long haul.
Yeah, definitely. And so you graduate from college, you move to New York. And the hustle, you know, that you're kind of speaking to now begins. So I'm curious to hear about your specific journey to landing that first Broadway show.
I got back from tour. So right out of college, I had the gift of touring with Dreamgirls, which started at the Apollo Theater. And we went all around the US, Canada, I believe, and Tokyo for 3 weeks. So that was really nice. And I got back to New York in December of 2010. I moved to Astoria in 2011. And I was doing a show at the performing, the APAC, Astoria Performing Arts Center, a show called The Human Comedy. And during that run, that rehearsal period, because I only did two shows of the run, I got an email about Book of Mormon. They were looking for an additional swing to join the Broadway company. And I went to that initial call, had a callback, had another callback for Casey Nicholaw. And then we were supposed to hear on that like Friday. And that Friday came, and my agent called and said, "You didn't get it, but they want to see you one more time." And I was like, "Oh my God." It was like, "It's down to three of you." I was like, "Oh God." And I show up to the final callback, and now two of these men are my friends, but between the two of them, they had seven Broadway shows and I had zero. And I was like, "I am not getting this job. It is not happening, right?" But I went in and sang my heart out. When I got out of the audition, my music director, Sam Davis from Dreamgirls, had left me a voicemail. He said, "You know, Book of Mormon called me as a reference. It's very important that people know that it's not just how talented you are, it's also your reputation as an artist. Are you easy to work with? Do you show up to work on time? Are you a good company member?" And if he had given me a bad review, I would not have gotten the Book of Mormon. But that was Monday. Tuesday came. I was like, huh. Wednesday came. Huh. Nothing. Thursday morning, I'd taken a nap and woken up. And I remember my agent at the time saying, "So are you ready to be on Broadway?" And I called my mother, I called my teachers. It's a very beautiful moment, but you know, it could have been anyone, you know, and I just thank God it was me. And that was the beginning. I left the Human Comedy after two performances. I officially started rehearsal on May 2nd, which was the day of the Tony nominations that year. So like woke up, watched the Tony nominations, and then went to my first rehearsal. And I would make my on-stage debut, I think it was like June 24th or 6th or something like that. Shaw.
Yeah, that's quite the journey.
I
Yeah.
mean, we all have one, and you don't
Sure.
know that you're living it as it's happening, but it's when I look back on it was a whirlwind, but like a complete gift. Complete
Sure.
gift.
Yeah, because you know, you try to live in the moment as much as you can with stuff like that.
Yeah.
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 So, in the midst of performing and at the beginning of your career and being on Broadway, when did writing come into play for you?
Writing initially came into play. I left the Book of Mormon company the summer of 2012 to go on the first national tour to be on stage. My heart was broken at the top of 2012, and my parents had coincidentally gifted me a guitar, which I can still not play. But I was noodling on it, and the heartbreak at the time came out through melodies and music and thoughts. And when I was on the tour, I met Ethan Pachter, my writing partner for composing, and he was the guitarist, and he was supposed to give me guitar lessons. And I was like, this is too hard, but how about I sing and you play? And that's what we did. And it started a very magical collaboration that has now been like 7, 8 years of work. And many new musicals that we're, developing. And yeah, it was a happy accident for composing. And then I started writing book for musicals in like 2017 with Bo, and Chicken and Biscuits was written in 2018.
Yeah, and to talk about like the difference between, writing and composing, what is so special about music for you that you feel like you can communicate both through words and music?
Melody transcends, music transcends time in a way. It's the like hyper elevated version of text. And sometimes I feel like people get goosebumps from music in a way they can't explain. Like music does a thing to your body that you can't explain, and that's why it's magical. And so writing something that, makes someone put their arm around their partner is like, something in the music earned that, and that's very special to me.
And so your next Broadway show, I believe, was Beautiful, the musical. And you were writing a musical while you were in that musical.
Pretty much everything. So 5 Points, it started like right as I booked Beautiful, actually. Everything I've written, Peter Pan, Polka Dots, Bo, 5 Points, Chicken and Biscuits, and I have a new play, but that wasn't written back. But all of those projects were written backstage in development while I was doing Beautiful.
Wow, that's great. So, how are you being inspired by all of that in the midst of that?
I mean, inspiration comes to me from the oddest things. Like Polka Dots was inspired from a Felicia Rashad YouTube video where she was talking about growing up in the Jim Crow South. And as a little black girl, she went and tasted a white-only water fountain. And that inspired a story where a little polka-dotted girl goes and tastes from a square sprinkler, right? It's like I try to parallel real life in an imaginative way for the theater. Bo was inspired from a friend's concert where he was doing a set down at Rockwood Music Hall, and he told a story about his grandfather. And I was like, ooh, the way you told your story made me feel like I had just experienced a complete musical. And so we wrote an actor-musician piece where this coming-of-age queer character finds a grandfather he never had, and all the music that was passed down to him gets him through life, right? It's like I take inspiration from the little things around us. And very human things become theatricalized in my world.
Do you believe in the phrase, write what you know, not what you don't know?
No, I don't believe in that. I believe in write what you want
Yeah,
and be
yeah.
prepared for feedback.
Yes.
Like write what you want and just be prepared that like people are not gonna like it. Like that's the other new thing too, is being okay with not being liked by everyone, but making sure that you're staying true to your voice, what you set out to say, who you set out to reach. Those are the most important components of being an artist. And if you affect those communities that you wanted to reach the most, you've done your job. But you just have to really know why, which is what I'm constantly asking myself. Why are you writing this thing? Who is this thing for? Is it a Broadway show? Everything you write doesn't have to be a Broadway show. Right, some more popular pieces, Hedwig had never made it to Broadway and was a popular, celebrated theater piece. So, what's the end goal? And it can't just be Broadway, it has to be impact, I think.
Are you influenced by other writers, composers, and do they have an impact on your work?
Coincidentally, last night I went to the Tick Tick Boom premiere, the movie premiere here in New York, and I met Lin-Manuel for the first time. And he had seen Chicken and Biscuits with his family a couple of weeks ago and tweeted about it very kindly. I'm very, very inspired by his movement, what he is doing to bridge the gap of Broadway and TV film is revolutionary. It is remarkable. And I get inspiration from that because he's done it in his own way and his own voice. And that's something that I'm hoping to do in the years to come, or to continue to do, rather.
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. So yeah, I saw Chicken and Biscuits literally last week, right? And so that was my fifth Broadway show I've ever seen. And I the day after that, I saw Clyde's, and that was my sixth. So, and I saw three Broadway shows in this in the last 2 months. So that goes to show you what I've been up to. and so like, I feel like I'm dedicating my, you know, theater going to seeing only BIPOC stories, and especially all the Black playwrights and their plays on Broadway right now. And in terms of that, what is important to you about this time in Broadway and how we are trying our best to progress?
For sure. I feel like there is a buffet of art, and I hope that people can see these different shows and celebrate them all in their different ways, that we are not monolithic, that we are unique and we are varied and we are layered and we are funny and we are strong and we are weak, and all of those stories deserve space. And I think after this movement, you know, I'm loving this movement of seven, I think now eight Black Broadway plays. But where are the Asian plays? Where are the non-binary stories? Where are, you know, the Latinx story? Where are these stories? And how do we crack open this Broadway space so that it belongs to everyone? Mm-hmm. You know, so I saw Lackawanna Blues, I saw Passover, but I haven't seen Trouble in Mind, Clyde's just yet. But I will see everything. You know, mm-hmm. I want to support the work. We have to celebrate the work because it's a movement that we may never get again, but we have it right now.
Definitely. Yeah. And so to talk more about Chicken and Biscuits, to kind of backtrack, what was the beginning processes of getting that show, that play up on its feet?
I write 10 pages at a time. I was in residence at the Director's Company where I was an actor 10 years ago in a reading. But both Bo, the musical, and Chicken and Biscuits were written in residence there. And I would write 10 pages and call people in, learn from that, write 10 more pages, here 20 pages. That's just my process because I like to write with the characters as we go rather than writing a complete first draft. And then you learn like everybody hates the lead character by page 30 and they have to sit through a reading where no one cares anymore, right? So I like to write and listen in process with actors. And we had four readings between November 2018 and the end of 2019. And our world premiere production was at the Queen's Theater mm-hmm. at the top of the pandemic. And we were able to see like an opening weekend, and then COVID shut everything down. COVID is chasing this show because it's closing us early on Broadway too. But the joy of opening this show in a pandemic, watching, you know, really diverse audiences flock to it, having people come and see the show four and five times because they feel so connected to it, is all that matters to me. It like moves me to know that that little story has resonated with a group of people that now claim it to be theirs. And I think that's another thing Broadway can do, is open up these stories so that we're not regurgitating to the same audiences who applaud the same style things, that new people are walking in Broadway theaters and going, oh, I didn't know I could see my, this is kind of cool. Maybe I'll come back. Right.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there are a lot of plays, especially like contemporary plays, with strong Black women. When I think of like writers like August Wilson, like of course he often writes for strong Black women, but the majority of the characters in his plays are Black men. And so why is it important to you to write one for Black women and two to have them as the lead roles of your stuff?
So my new play, Invisible, which I just got back from Los Angeles developing a reading with the IAMA Theater, stars two Black women who go on this hallucination, sort of sci-fi, slaverella fairy tale, where one of them is invisible and one of them is a slave. And it's a way to discuss these issues of race and, you know, racial history, but through a comedic lens where the Black women have the power. I'm interested in giving Black women power. When we talk about the patriarchy and we talk about how things sort of drizzle down in the system, Black women are usually beneath the boot of many, but they are the most electric and inspiring and strong people on this planet. And so when we write them, I think we need to write them with elegance and with faith and with strength. And that's something that I'm dedicated to doing. And Chicken and Biscuits is that, Invisible is that. And I will continue to do that because I think the Black women that I have in my world, in my orbit, and the women that raised me are powerful. You know, they're not subservient, they are not below, they are actually queens. And so, how do we redirect that narrative in the theater? I want to contribute to that.
Do you find yourself like taking pieces of like your personal family life and the woman you know and throwing them into the world of your plays?
Oh yeah. Are you kidding me? My mother is a huge inspiration. She's just hilarious and heartfelt and care and will take care of people and will show up for people, you know? And that's the love I want to see. Those are the women I want to see. I don't want to see them pillaged and hurt and crying. And we've seen that. We know what that looks like. What does the other side look like?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You are bringing church to Broadway. You have
Yes.
brung, you know, and it's a beautiful thing to see, to be in a room with, like you say, people from so many different backgrounds come in and find their self in the community that you create on stage. And so what is the biggest blessing you've seen from putting Chicken and Biscuits on stage for such a diverse audience?
Well, what people don't realize when it comes to Broadway is a stamp. As a writer, Broadway is just a stamp, really, for your show to be recognized on a national stage so it then can seep into the communities that it was meant to actually affect. And so, you know, there have been people that have traveled from, I have a friend coming from London, I have a friend that came up from Florida to see it. And you have Black aunties sitting in groups of four laughing and enjoying themselves. And when Chicken and Biscuits is done in Atlanta and Los Angeles and Cleveland, it's going to hopefully bring in a new audience. That to me, you know, I've had young Black queer men saying, thank you. I've never had my feelings articulated. I didn't think I could have space in theater to talk about the intersectionality of what it is to be queer and Christian. Like that is powerful. And so maybe that wasn't the most popular thing the season and wasn't selling out, but the people that it did grab, it really made them feel seen. And I think that is as empowering and powerful as a Broadway quote hit. So I'm proud because the needle of our story is moved that much further in a new direction. And it is in the history books
Oh
forever.
yeah. Yes. And it'll come back, I'm sure. I mean, it's gonna live on.
I mean, it'll be done. You know, in some shows, you know, they arrive and then 5 years from now, people are like, oh, that was really funny. It's like, yeah, it was the first time, but you know what I mean? It's
Right.
the same show. And
Yeah.
then sometimes it's locational, right? Like we open the show in Atlanta, it might run for years, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Chicken and Biscuits does a great job of resembling life in the way that, you know, you find these characters in the midst of their grief and pain, but they're also finding joy and laughter through all of that. So my question to you is, what does joy mean to you? And are joy and black joy two different things?
Yes. Black joy is coming off the heels of the Black experience in America, which is a very specific lived identity. The oppression, the slavery, the racism, and to weed through all of that and find light is a different kind of radical joy.
Yeah.
That is not your over-the-counter joy, right? Watching a baby take its first steps, that's joy. Right? That's universal. But our joy is specific because we've had to endure and still have to endure, you know, what America really is. And so I find the term, I find the movement, the writing, the work important. To be Black and to have joy is a revolution. It's a revolution.
It's funny because like I feel like now people are saying that the opposite of black joy is black trauma. And I don't necessarily agree with that because trauma means something different for everyone. And to say that put a stamp on that and to say like, this is what I think black trauma is, or this is what I think black joy is, for someone who has not experienced any of that as a black person, I think is shouldn't be done.
Yeah, I think it's dangerous to have any title. I mean, I think you are allowed to self-identify however you see fit. And I like using the term Black Joy because so much of what I've seen in the theater specifically is trauma, you know? And mind you, to make it through what we've been through and to come out on the other side is something to celebrate. But for the only narrative of our experience to be traumatic is not true in my world. Right? Like I did not live a lot of trauma. Some people have, but that just as long as we're clarifying that when you see black people on stage, it should not be associated only with that. Once we clarify that, then let's go. But I don't always see programming balancing the act. I see a lot of one and not of the other. And so I personally feel like I want to combat that and give black women superpowers on stage. What does that story look like? Why can't we have that? You know, so and there should be room for all of it. I just want a balance.
Yeah, and that's also a conversation in film as well. Of course, theater has a long way to go, but film also has a great ways to go in terms of diversity and what stories by BIPOC people are you telling and are you putting forth, So I want to know what keeps you going on a daily basis with all of your, crazy schedule things you have going on, and how do you keep those creative juices, as they call it, alive and flowing?
People like you keep me going because I know there's a generation of artists who feel like there isn't a reason to write, there isn't a reason to keep going. They don't feel seen, they don't see themselves, right? And so what I've learned in the past year and a half is like I have access to continue to be creative, to get into rooms and to make hopefully moves and establish change so that it is easier and the path is set so that more people see themselves. I'm not really, I mean, what I like about writing, it's not really about me because ultimately on the stage, the people to be discovered are the artists, are the actors. And if I'm creating new work that's supplying more jobs for people of color, I've done more than just myself a service. So it's really the community of artists behind me that keeps me going because I'm like, oh, so and so would be really great in this part. Oh, we could make a star out of this person if we write this thing for them. That is exciting to me. So that keeps me going. And then schedule-wise, I have a great assistant. I've had like a publicist and some other people to like just keep me straight. I have a great management team. We don't take on too much. I was burning out a little bit last week, but like luckily I just have like Zooms and podcasts and some in-person meetings and seeing shows and premieres and stuff, but I'm not writing right now. I'm giving myself a little breath to take in, you know, the holidays. You know, balance of life and self is as important as the work, and you can't work yourself into the ground or you will have nothing left.
Yeah, along those lines, what do you say to artists who feel the pressure of like, I have to create, when there's not always a need to do so if without the lack of inspiration?
Do it in your own time. Let it come to you easy. Like, don't take on too much. I've learned to say no. It's a very hard thing for me, but say no when you have to, and make sure you are serving your spirit and your body and your mind as a human being first, and you are not putting your artistry before your ability to walk through the world and be. You only get one body. And I'm like, speaking of joy, there must be joy in the room. There must be joy on the project. I'm not just trying to get a check. Checks will come. But I have to really love this thing I'm doing, and I have to feel good while I'm doing it. You don't have to be scorned to be an artist, you know? That's a misconception.
Yeah, definitely. What have you been up to, and what's next for you? You have a lot of projects going on, a lot of new plays in the works. So do you want to talk about those?
Yeah, so Chicken and Biscuits sadly closes in 12 days on Broadway, but that's just the beginning. There's possibility of tour and regional stuff definitely bubbling. I have this new play, Invisible, so I'll be working on that in the new year. My pilot has been picked up for development with a production company, so I'll be working on that. We shot a film, I think I'm allowed to say this, of Bo this past summer, and so we're trying to figure out how and when that's going to roll out. Yeah, lots of possibilities, on the horizon, but I'm trying to push my arrow towards TV film and really bridge that gap. And write music for television and all of that. So lots of things in development. And we'll see, if there's another project that lands on Broadway or regional or whatever. But I just feel very powerful and vibrant. I feel like I'm buzzing with possibilities right now. And the more I buzz, the more jobs I can write and shows I can write for people to star in. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's great. Congrats on all of that.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing it all. So I love to ask this question to everyone I interview. What is your advice to young artists and specifically for you, young Black aspiring playwrights, actors, directors, what do you say to them?
Are you writing for a system or are you writing for a generation? And they may not align. And just be okay with that because I'm learning that on site. Like writing the authenticity of what you want to say may not align with the system that you're in, and you have to be okay with it. So prepare your mind and your spirit and your pen to be challenged by people that may not understand what you are trying to say. That does not belittle the fact that it may have complete value. And that is the conundrum of being a Black artist in this business, is that the system is strikingly white. There's just no way to debate that. So how do you navigate that and be prepared to be misunderstood and celebrated simultaneously, but if you want it, you have to prepare yourself not just for the work, but the emotional navigation of the world itself.